Today on Next Level E-Commerce.
I should have just hired somebody right away, but I was afraid because that was my only income. But then when I found out we were having a baby, I didn't have a choice.
You're listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Each week, we feature inspiring stories from entrepreneurs who have taken their business to the next level. They share successes and failures and what kept them going when they felt like giving up. And here's your host, Isaac Smith.
Thank you for joining me for episode 39. This is one that I think a lot of you will be able to relate to. Sometimes you know exactly what to do, but even though you know you should do it, you just can't bring yourself to take the action. And it's in these times when it's really helpful to have an outside force to give you a little push to get moving. There's nothing like bringing a new life into the world to make you sit back and reflect on your priorities. Or, said maybe a little more accurately, there's nothing quite like having a baby to make you freak the hell out. And if you're a business owner doing everything yourself and you find out there's a baby on the way, the clock is ticking. My guest today is Anastasia Vankova, and she found herself in exactly this situation. How did she transform her business so that she could focus on her family once the baby arrived without causing major problems? You're going to find out when Anastasia tells her story in just a minute. This episode of Next Level E-Commerce is brought to you by Summit E-Commerce Advisors. That's my company. We do bookkeeping and cash management for e-commerce companies. And if your books are a mess right now, later on in the show, I'll tell you how you can get a free strategy session to figure out exactly what you need to do to clean them up and get moving forward. Now we're going to dive right into the story. You can find links to everything we discuss in our show notes at nextlevelecommerce.co/39. I actually met Anastasia at the Dropship Lifestyle Retreat in Hawaii, the same retreat actually that I met my last guest, Matt Scott, at. And if you're not familiar, Dropship Lifestyle is a course that teaches how to build, you guessed it, dropshipping businesses. Anastasia has a great story of coming to the United States from Russia looking for opportunity, finding different opportunities, falling in love, building a family, and growing a business that fits her family and her lifestyle. I know you're going to love this one. And now, here's Anastasia.
I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I never really had a plan what I wanted to do, but that was kind of my intention ever since I remember, graduating from high school. My degree is in international economics and business. And then I'm from Russia. And once I finished my degree, I moved to the United States. And of course, I couldn't find a job, working as an economist or anything related to that. So I had to do, waitress, bartending, front desk, clerk. Then I got my degree in bookkeeping, actually. It was more of like a short, 6 months course, because I already had the foundation from college. So I just had to, readjust it to American way of doing bookkeeping. And yeah, so I was ready. And then I actually did get a job as a bookkeeper.
Okay.
And I worked for about 4 years in a construction company. That was, it was fun in the beginning when I was learning, like everything else. And then once I figured everything out, it probably in half a year, it became super boring.
Yeah.
And I realized it was basically it. There was nowhere to move. It was a small company. And then I started trying to figure out, going back to my initial thoughts, I want to be an entrepreneur. I know that there is this online thing that is coming up. It was back in 2010. 2011 when I started researching, but I didn't really, I tried like several different things, from trying to figure out blogging to iPhone apps. It was games at the time. I probably like spent a year tinkering with that. And that was the first time I made money online. And that was like proof of concept, like, ooh, okay, well, I guess if this works, there's got to be something else better that I can do. And so I tried to listen to, like, try to figure it out. Listen to podcasts, Google, followed some blogs, and finally I stumbled upon Anton's course and started dropshipping. So after a year, probably, or maybe a little bit more, I guess like somewhere between a year and, and 2 years, I started making decent money and I quit bookkeeping.
Wow.
So, yeah.
First of all, when you came from Russia, did you come by yourself or did you come with your family or?
Nope, by myself.
Wow. And what was that dream? What did you have in mind? Like, what were you looking for?
Well, a year before I moved, I traveled to San Diego, California, as just for the summer as a student. And I had a, an opportunity to learn the language, and it was like a work and travel visa, so I could learn language and work. Met a lot of cool people. It was an amazing summer. And then I met this guy who I really liked, who was from Indiana. And I actually went to visit him that summer, traveled a little bit more around the country. I liked it here. And then I came back home, finished my degree. And, you know, when you are just out of college, you start your life, basically. So that's the, you know, the decision point, like where you want to start your life. And I realized I will start from scratch either here or like in Russia, or I can choose anywhere else in the world and go there. And I kind of always had a feeling that I wanted to move like in a different country. It didn't know where, just kind of somewhere else. But since I already had experience in the United States, I had friends, and that was, you know, kind of a natural decision. And yeah, I moved to San Diego.
Wow. That's cool. And I'm just going to make the leap. I'm going to have an educated guess. This guy, is this your husband now?
Yeah. Oh, so wow. We stayed in touch that whole year while I was finishing college. We were just talking on Skype. And then I came back to San Diego, spent the summer there. He was still in Indiana. And then he made a proposal and we decided to get married. And we didn't want to tell anybody. And we just wanted to go to Vegas and just get hitched. But his family found out and they did like the real the real wedding. We planned it probably like within a month. We only had a month to like buy a dress, buy a ring, like get a venue and restaurant, like fly everybody in hotels. And like, it was crazy, but we pulled it off.
That's funny.
It was fun.
That's funny. Cool.
Yeah. And then I made him move to California. So it was really fun.
Nice. And so when was that, that you moved?
2011 or 2010.
Okay. Cool. And so then you, and when did you start your first adventures in entrepreneurship? I guess you would say that's your app, iPhone app thing?
Yeah, I started researching probably like after we got married, but didn't really start the app until we moved to Indiana because I was bored. Mm. And that was like 2012 or 13, something like that. And I didn't start dropshipping until the end of 2014.
Gotcha. You know what?
Yes.
That's so funny to me. You say you were bored. I look back at my life. And so I don't know if you know, I was an architect. And when I first started working, my very first job, my professional job, I was used to school, you know, where you're working on your projects all hours of the day, all hours of the night. And then now at this office or this professional job, I came home at 5 o'clock And that was so strange to me. I honestly didn't know what to do. I would get home and I would look around. I would stand there and go, okay, now what? And I had these conversations with my wife, like, what are we supposed to be doing when we're home in the evening? And we just said, I don't know, maybe we should get some hobbies. And I would look back at that, and that was 2006. And you know what I chose to do?
What?
Video games. Can you believe that was my choice? Yeah, video games. So I spent like, I wouldn't say I spent all of my time for years, but you know, a good portion of my evenings wasting it away with video games. And I look back now and think like, man, this has been a long, hard road in e-commerce, and it's taken years. And I hear the stories of people who started early, like Anton, in like 2005, 2006. And I just, oh, that hurts. Like, I could have started this back then.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I started when I started researching it, like back in 2011. But I was just, my head was not in the right place. Mm-hmm. I was, 22? In California, all I wanted to do was go out and have fun and go to the beach and just not. Yeah. I mean, I had no time because I was having too much fun. But then when we moved to Indiana, there was nothing to do. So, okay, well, let's get back to that. I was thinking about entrepreneurship, let's see if I can figure something out. Because there's literally nothing to do here. You can go out to eat or movies or, I mean, work out. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's, you know, you got to have some fun. And if you're going to be in California, you know, that's not so bad. Sounds like people who never leave places like Indiana really have an advantage on us.
I would say so. It was, you know, I thought, oh, it's such a bummer. I don't like it here. But now in retrospect, I'm grateful for that period of time that I had to actually get back to what I want to do with my life, you know, what I want to build and do that actually, instead of just kind of thinking and not really doing anything because there's so many distractions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you need some quiet time and space to, if you want to build something and create.
For sure. And even once you have built and you're trying to grow, I am 100% serious. I think my most productive time is when I take days off or like a week off and don't do anything. Cause then I get a new business idea and that becomes a whole new business or something, you know?
Yeah. I love working on Sundays because it's not like I'm working on anything current. I'm just actually like either planning or reviewing stuff or just kind of working on creative projects and ideas, like you were saying, you know, like, so like that's my time when I block out 2 hours and I can just not be worried if I wasted it, but usually something really good comes out of it.
Yeah. So I got to go back. You said iPhone apps. How the heck do you know how to code? It doesn't sound like you spent all this time coding. How do you, what's the deal with that? how did you do that?
It was kind of popular at the time. I don't remember exactly how I found it, but I think it was a blog I was reading. And this guy was doing like, you can reskin apps. So you buy a code. There's basically like a template you buy. You create an account. You can put them up on iPhone, Google, whatever. iPhone, you have to pay a little bit, like $90 a year or something like that for that developer membership on the App Store. And all you have to do is, there is a game, there is a template already. The game works. All you have to do is just change the graphics. You can hire somebody to create graphics. I figured it out how to do it myself, you know, I used clip art or whatever. And yeah, and it becomes a different game. You change the sounds, you change everything. And so, I don't know, like, for example, Angry Birds, right? Everybody knows Angry Birds. But then if you change it from birds to pigs, it will be like Angry Pigs, right? You change all the graphics, the colors, the name, the everything. And the game, like the actual code, it works the same way. So you would like do the same things, but it is a different game.
Wow.
And then you list it on the App Store and you market it. So the marketing was the key part of getting your app visible. And back then there was like not that much competition. Now I don't think, I don't know if it's still possible to even do it. But what people did is that they would just, they would buy a code, and sometimes you can buy a multiple license. And then you can actually hire a developer to help you reskin it, to like add all the graphics that you already created. So basically you can hire a developer and a designer, and you don't have to do anything else, and they'll put it together and that's it. You're done. You can just, all you have to do is list it and market it on the App Store. Basically you do SEO for the App Store. And
gotcha.
For, and people would have like, what do you call it? Like a portfolio of apps. And they would have a freemium model. So the app is free to download, but it has ads on it. And there are, at that time, it was like 3 or 4 different platforms you can sign up with. And they put their ads or people's ads on your app, and you get paid. And you can also have upgrades. So people buy them sometimes, and you just get paid as well. It worked for, I mean, I would get like $50 a month or something from an app. And that was like, okay, that's cool. It works.
Yeah.
I just got my money back for that code that I paid for. And you can buy a code for like anywhere between $200 and $400.
Hmm. It's so funny, the world behind the scenes that we just are not even aware of. You know what that reminds me of is, it sounds like private labeling. Have you ever made the connection between that and ordering?
Yes, it's like private labeling. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know about the existence of private labeling back then.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know anything about e-commerce. So yeah, it is exactly like that.
That's funny. And the other thing that it makes me think of is, so you said you learned how to do some of the graphic stuff yourself. Did you hire anybody to help you with those things?
On the first app I hired, no, not on the graphics, but I hired somebody to help me with the code, I think, once. And it was somebody from like somewhere from Middle East, Pakistan, maybe. And that guy, he charged me way too much, I think, because I didn't know anything. And then basically he did something really easy to just publish my app. And then I realized like I can do it myself. And I just did it. I did it myself after that. But yeah, I did. I tried it once. That was actually a bad hiring experience that scarred me for a while. And I didn't want to hire anybody else when I started dropshipping.
Oh, see, I was thinking you were going to go the other way with it.
Yeah, no.
I was thinking you got this experience having, because here's the story I made up in my mind. I thought you had to, because you didn't know how to do most of the stuff, you had to hire people. And that set you up for being really good at hiring and managing in your e-commerce stores. Yeah, but no, I got it wrong.
I wish. I'm actually pretty horrible. I like to figure everything out by myself. And like, I'm still, to this day, every so often I would come to realization that I spent like 4 hours trying to change this, I don't know, icon somewhere and like tinkering with code to make it exactly the way I want it. And then I'm like, what am I doing? Upwork. Done. It's done. It's $20. I just wasted 4 hours.
Yeah.
I hate that. But yes, I do have a tendency of, you know, trying to like really understand and figure everything out. And it's not good.
Yeah. You know, and then, so we're fast forwarding a bit here, and we saw each other in Prague at the most recent Dropship Lifestyle Retreat, where you gave a very, I thought, very good, thorough, and eye-opening for a lot of people presentation about managing a team, managing the store while you're off, you know, doing your thing. So how did you go from being afraid to bring on a team member to now releasing so much control?
I didn't have a choice. I should have done it, you know, maybe like a year or two in. When I quit my bookkeeping job, I should have just hired somebody right away. But I was afraid because that was my only income and I was not ready to, you know, pay somebody. So I didn't see the value in it just yet. But then when I found out we were having a baby, I didn't have a choice. And my business was at the point where all I did all day was doing, you know, processing orders, dealing with customer service, all like, you know, you would have a return or a damage, and that takes a lot of time and follow-ups and stuff like that. So when the volume is higher, it just takes a lot of time. And then you feel like you're productive, but you don't really move the needle. So that really can hurt the business. But I didn't see it until there was a need to figure out how to remove myself from the business because I was about to have a baby and was not going to be able to have any time to spend on any business related things. So that became a top priority. And, you know, I just kind of got over the fear and everything else. Just spent about probably 3 months researching, hiring, interviewing, training, and then I just let go and I got lucky on the first hire. The girl just worked out. Well,
that's amazing.
Let me take it
back. We're here. What's your daughter's name? Sorry.
Sonia. Can you hear her?
Yeah, we can hear her. That's great.
Yeah. I actually did hire one girl before the current one, and I trained her for about a week. And she just flaked off. She was like, oh, my baby is sick or something else happened. And I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And was gone. I was like, oh my gosh, I just spent this whole week training her, recording the videos. And I have to start over again. But, you know, I did with another ad. I interviewed another probably like 10 people, vetted them. And yeah, that was worth it.
Yeah. I think I can definitely relate to that. And I think you're probably luckier than most to get it right on the first try. I think a lot of people can relate to that. You know, I went through several before I found one who was really good. Oh my gosh, that pain, the heartache of like you put so much hope into like getting, and then exactly they ghost or, oh man.
Yeah. you just feel like you are almost there. You just got it done. Right. You feel like, okay, it's like the finish line and you don't have to do this work anymore. And then boom, nope, you have to start over again and find somebody else. But you know, that's the thing. If whenever you fail, and you're going to fail anyways, you just have to learn from your mistakes and do it smarter the next time.
Yeah.
Which I did. I found a few things in my, what do you call it, like a job ad, and I reviewed it and I offered more money. So I got better candidates the second time around.
Is there anything else you did besides offering more money to get better candidates?
I think offered more money. Yeah. And then I also did it differently. I was more efficient with my emails, like response emails. I would send them, I created a template and I would just send them a template with all that already included the tests because I already created it. I had a test task for them and invite to my Calendly to make an appointment for the interview right away. Oh, and requested the referral. So like everything at once. And that in that way, I didn't have to send them 3 emails.
Yeah. Yeah. When you fail at something like we're talking about, you know, and these are not huge failures, but it's when you fail at something,
it's usually setback that, yeah.
Yeah, usually prompts, it should, I think, prompt you to go, okay, well, chances are I'm going to fail at it the next time. So if I'm going to have to do this four times, I'm going to have to do it more efficiently. And so you come up with systems to do things.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So I'll tell you what I figured out. Actually, there's a really good video, and I'll put this link in the show notes. Do you know who Noah Kagan is? Yeah, he's one of these online business guys. He was one of the early employees at, I think it was Facebook. Yeah. And so he's done, AppSumo. He's the founder of AppSumo.
Oh, okay.
Sumo everything, Sumo me, Sumo this, Sumo that. He has a really great video on his system for hiring. And it's great. He automates so much of it. And he does it with Google Forms, making people fill out a form. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, this is great. So, yeah, and he does using just Gmail to auto-respond to inquiries, you know, the with certain, you know, one of the tricks is to put a phrase in there. You know, they have to put this phrase at the top of their letter just to
I do
show
that. Yes.
Yeah.
In the end, like to make sure that they read it and they actually understand, I put very specific instructions on how to apply mm-hmm. and whoever doesn't follow them just automatically like filters out.
Yeah. Yeah. So he has some really great tips on that, which are really good.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You can use custom templates. They used to be called canned responses in Gmail to just auto respond. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's great. It's great. Mm-hmm. I won't go on and on about that. But the other thing that I did that this I think is what really made a big difference. And you said change the quality of candidates you got. So what do you know of Grant Cardone?
Yeah.
Okay. I like him. I don't love everything that he says, but one thing that I took away from his book is he's always selling. He says, even when I'm buying, I'm selling. And so I realized, oh crap, I'm not buying help. I'm selling opportunity. And so when I changed that mindset and started writing my job description as like a sales letter, this is why you need to apply. You're getting this and that and this and that. And down here, that had a huge impact. And actually the person I hired told me she could see that this is I was a person she wanted to work with because I put that energy into the job description.
I actually did the same. Oh. And I posted my job on the online jobs.ph. So the Filipinas, right? Like mm-hmm. I was, because I researched and figured out that they're good in customer service and they're loyal. So I needed somebody long-term and good at customer service. I researched their values and I created the job post in a way that hit, you know, most of their like top values, what they're looking for in their employment, like, you know, friendly environment, opportunity for growth, because all of them want to learn and like free training and like all the stuff and, you know, potential for promotion and that kind of things. And yeah, a lot of them told me too that, oh, I really, really want to work for your company because of all this stuff.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I love it. That's awesome. So then one thing that I've been really impressed with you, sort of like changing subject a little bit here. You know, there's a lot of digital nomads and a lot of people who travel around while they do business. And I know that a lot of them, well, I'm not going to speak disparagingly, but you're doing well with your e-commerce store. And you're married, you've got a young child. How old is your kid now?
I think she's like 20 months.
Okay.
Kind of stopped counting after a year. So she's going to be 2 in March.
Yeah, yeah. So under 2. And you guys have been traveling just... How long did you travel this past year?
Oh, judging by the vacation days that my husband took, probably like half a year.
Wow.
Out of this like 2019.
That's amazing. I have a 9-year-old and we've traveled a little bit, but I don't think I would have had the patience, I guess, or it's tough traveling with young kids. How do you manage that traveling so much? Hey, we're going to take a quick break with a word from today's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Summit E-commerce Advisors, which of course is my company. We do bookkeeping and cash management for e-commerce businesses. And for a limited time, we're offering a no-cost bookkeeping strategy session. So what is this and why are we offering it? Well, you may recall that I recently hosted the Survive and Thrive E-commerce Summit, where we had 48 speakers at the top of their game and over 900 attendees. And the number one theme that came up over and over was the critical importance, especially right now, of managing your finances and your cash flow. And you cannot do that if your bookkeeping is not in order. Right now is the time to be looking monthly or even weekly at costs you can trim, product lines that are underperforming or doing really well, and optimizing based on your numbers. So that leads me to the number one thing that I hear. People tell me, Isaac, I just don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do. I have some books, but they're a mess. They're old. They're out of date. What can I do? That's why we're offering this strategy session with me. And I'll walk you through what you need to do to get your books set up so that you can make these decisions and improve your finances. So, to get your no-cost bookkeeping strategy session with me, that's happening for a limited time, go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books. Again, that's nextlevelecommerce.co/books. And of course, I'll have the link in the show notes. And now, back to the show.
Well, it wasn't too hard with the little, like, she was 8 months when we left for Asia. The hardest part was the flight. Yes, she cried. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was miserable 24 hours. And I mean, we had some setbacks, like she got sick when we got to Thailand, maybe because of the cold in China or change of weather in general, you know, like traveling from, you know, in Indiana, we have 4 seasons, and then getting into like a tropical climate, who knows? But, you know, everything is figure outable. And we had this app, Doctor on Demand, and we called the doctor and told, like, oh, my baby's sick, like in the middle of the night. And she was like, okay, let's check this. Temperature, okay, let's check this. They had me like touch her chest, okay, she's fine, it's just cold, or whatever she had at that time, and there's nothing you can do. She's a baby. She'll get over it. $10
for the yeah. I like it.
You know, we were okay. And flights can be complicated, but you just have to, like, for us, it was timing. Morning flights better than evening flights. You learn as you go. And then in Asia, it was nice because we could hire a nanny, and they're cheaper there, like in Bali. And she would come to our villa and watch the baby while we were working, or we even did scuba diving certification. She would watch the baby at the pool while we were training, and yeah, so that was cool. And in Europe, it was a little stressful to do like country hopping, which we did. Probably wasn't the smartest thing, but we rented a car, so it wasn't too bad. It was just, you know, a lot of packing and unpacking.
So your attitude is like, oh, it's not, no big deal, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not a big deal. It sounds like it's a lot, but it's not. And all you can find baby food and diapers and all this other stuff you need for babies everywhere. Like if you can find it in Thailand or Bali, China, you can find it anywhere.
Yeah.
I remember we went to Costa Rica for the first time. Like the first travel was to Costa Rica. It was almost like a test trip. And I was thinking, oh, Costa Rica, do they have diapers in Costa Rica? Yeah, they have Walmart, they have like everything. So you just, you know, you just go get all the stuff, and you, like a lot of people scare you about mosquitoes and all that. You just bring a spray, you'll be fine.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
And you're only able to do all of, you've really, I think, you didn't really do all of this traveling before you outsourced all the day-to-day stuff, did you?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't. Well, we traveled the first time we went for like a really extended trip, because we always traveled ever since we, you know, moved here and we got married. We traveled even when we were working. We would try to like go to Mexico for, you know, extended weekend or something. But the long one was we went to Canary Islands for about 3 months. Canary Islands and Barcelona and Italy. It was fun, but I was working. Like, I didn't have anybody, no help. And that was the first time my store crossed 100,000 a month in revenue. So, like, to compare, my previous sales were around 40,000. And here I am with some more than double amount of orders. And I'm the one who has to process them. And now I'm 5 hours ahead. So, like, way off schedule. It was tough. Yeah. Plus, you know, my husband is not really working. He was on vacation and wants to do all this stuff. We were like, okay, we're in Barcelona for a week. I got to work, but okay, let's go see the Sagrada La Familia or whatever it's called. And it was tough just to manage all that. And basically, when I came back, I was like, and I knew that we were having a baby. I was like, that's it. Like, there's no way I can do this.
Yeah.
It's very stressful to travel and be the one who handles everything.
Oh, yeah.
Business. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how people, I mean, I know some people do it, but it's tough.
Yeah, for sure. So what does your husband do that he's able to take off so much time?
He's in construction. So for him, summer is busy, winter is not so much.
Okay.
Which is why we travel in the winter most of the time. Also, he works for his family, and you know, they're a little bit more flexible with vacation.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
We started with like, oh, just, you know, weekend here, weekend there, and then, by the way, we're going for 3 months this time around. Like, what? And then 3 months more. But I think they're used to it.
Cool. So what? So you've basically had one store that's done, the store that's doing well. You've been working on it for a long time, right? Have you had any other businesses, tried starting other stores along the way, or is it you've just focused all on one?
I do prefer focus on one, but I did start two other stores. They were not a huge success. One, I just didn't even put any energy in it. The one store, I had it for probably 2 years, I want to say. I got it to the point, I started ads. I didn't even optimize the ads the way they teach it in the course, in the dropship lifestyle. I basically just turned them on and put like $5 budget a day. And that store was just running on its own, making $300 to $400 a month for a while. And I always thought to myself, you know, well, I'll get to it. There is so much opportunity and it's growing on its own, but I never did. I ended up selling it to another DSL student, actually. I sold it when we were in Canary Islands. Because I was like, there is no way. I have no time for anything. And this is another. Because in order to make $300 to $400, you still have to make sales. And
yeah,
you would have customer requests. And that was a niche when people like to talk to you, ask questions. And I had no idea about anything in that niche. Like, I really didn't know the product, which was horrible. But I didn't want to learn. I just didn't have mental capacity for it. So it was a good decision to sell it. It still exists. I don't know how well it's doing right now, but it's out there.
Yeah.
And then we started another store right before Hawaii. Because I thought my husband might be interested in that. So I thought that would be a store for him to learn, but he wasn't and we sold it probably like a couple months later. We had a few sales, but it needed like way more work, and I just sold it for like $1,000.
Yeah. So the power, you're a believer in power of focus.
Right? Yes. Sounds like. Mm-hmm. But now that I have a team, I'm actually growing now. In 2020, we are planning to open probably 6 stores.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one wow. is ready. All right.
One is ready. The second one is on the way. And hopefully the first one's going to be open before the end of the year.
Yeah. Nice.
And then, I mean, it's an optimistic goal, but you know, yeah. I always want to shoot for the, shoot for the stars and land on the moon.
Yeah. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. So I was going to, that's one thing I was going to ask you about. You've done well. And yeah, what do you want to see out of the next few years? Like what are your big goals? What are you working towards?
That's a big goal. I just kind of feel like it's time to step it up. I've been traveling for probably the last 2 years. Like ever since I got my team in place, I relaxed and I didn't really do much to improve the business. And coming back from DSL retreat, this like from Prague, mm-hmm. I got really fired up because yeah. just talking with everybody and, you know, seeing what other people do and I'm like, oh, we can do something with it. Like I know how to build systems now, and I know, you know, how to build dropshipping stores and market them and everything. So we should just capitalize on that. And yeah, I think we're going to have 10 stores in 2 years.
Awesome.
And what I realized now that we are in the process of adding one more store is that how different it is running one store versus multiple stores. And I think that transition from one to two is the hardest. And then adding more would be, you know, not a big deal. But just figuring out how the whole thing works with 2 stores, 3 stores, 4, that's what kind of takes the time right now to like set everything up and how many people we're going to need per store or how that whole, like all the integrations and automations, how are they going to work and switching all the accounts and like that kind of stuff. But once it all set up for one, it's going to be easy to add more.
Are you in contact with people? Do you know people who run multiple stores like this, more than a few? Have you been talking with people?
I haven't really been talking to anybody. I know that Iria and Joshua are doing this. I know that Corey has been running multiple stores for a while, but I haven't talked to Corey in a long, long time. I should probably reconnect with him.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a really big goal. And so one thing I want to ask you is, I'll tell you what I've decided for myself. Personally, I'm not going to be operating stores at least for the foreseeable future. But when I thought maybe I would, I would. So you and everybody listening probably know that I sold my store in March, my main business. And while I was waiting for it to sell, I thought, well, crap, I want something to do. You know, I've got kind of nothing to do. Let me build, and I want to have something to do after this thing sells. Let me build a new store. So I did. And I forgot, holy crap, that is a ton of work.
It is. Yeah.
And not only that, it's a ton of work, but you don't know if it's going to work or not. There's always mm-hmm. the, you know, it's a roll of the dice. That's just how the game is. And so what I decided was, so that store actually, you know, I quit working on it after I sold the business because I went, woohoo, I'm free. But it made me realize that if I was going to do this in the future, I would not build from scratch again. I would buy a store that is already profitable to about, minimum $500 a month profit to maybe 1,000 would be, I think, a good range, because I think just the skills that I've developed over the years, I feel pretty confident that if a store is doing $1,000 a month, I can double, triple, quadruple that within hopefully 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. And that would be, you know, that'd be a 2 to 4x. Like if I was thinking about portfolio buying and selling or even just growing.
Yeah.
Versus that same energy. I think it takes way more energy to go from 0 to 500. So I wonder if you've thought about that in this big master plan of having 10 stores.
I kind of have. I recently listened to a podcast, Invest Like a Boss. They had a guy there on there. And all he does is just, he buys businesses. And, you know.
Do you remember the name?
Partners of the guy.
Yeah.
The name of the podcast is Invest Like a mm-hmm. Boss. And the guy, I don't remember, but it was one of the recent episodes. Hold on, see if
all
I
right.
can find it. But yeah, all he does is buying and selling businesses. And the way he described it made total sense. He's like, well, why people think that business is something that should build? It's so complex. For example, if you want a car, what are you going to buy parts and build a car? No, you're going to go and buy a car from somebody who knows how to build cars. If you need a house, are you going to buy some lumber and build a house? No, most likely you're going to buy a house that is already built. I mean, maybe you will hire a builder and build it. But again, you're not doing it yourself. So why people think that they should build businesses from scratch? I'm like, oh, it makes total sense. So not everybody, you know, is designed that way and can do it. And maybe it does make sense to just let somebody who's better at it build a business and then just buy it and optimize it and grow it.
So for your big plan, what do you think?
I think I'm going to start building because there's two niches that are side niches. I'm basically mm-hmm. selling these products already on my main store. And then they're just, I feel like they can be really good on their own.
Mm.
So the two for sure I'm building. And that will be easy once you build one, you copy the template and everything is just mm-hmm. kind of goes. On this other ones, I'll think about it. Not sure. But I did consider definitely buying it. What is stopping me, and it might be a limiting belief, just don't want to deal with other people's mistakes. Like, you know, like the way they have everything set up and it might be not perfect and I'll have to like redo everything. But that's the same exact reason why I didn't want to hire somebody.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to have to like go and fix their mistakes. Some people are actually better than me and I just need to accept them.
Yeah. There's a guy who I think you should talk to. And I've actually interviewed him. That episode is coming out in a couple of weeks. His name is Ian Bond. And he buys and operates dropshipping stores. And he's built this portfolio out of this. If you're listening, the show, that episode has already come out by the time you're hearing this. But yeah, I think you should talk to him.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll give you his contact info after we're done here. But he's pretty interesting guy.
Okay, I will try to find that somebody else, and I'll give you the name of the guy who I listen to.
Sure, and we can put that in the show notes.
Yes, it's a great concept.
Well. Yeah. So we talked about your what are you building towards? You have this big plan for the next year or two, but like mm-hmm. what's the ultimate dream?
No, it's basically financial freedom, because right now we're doing all right, but it's not like I can just kick back and do nothing. I want to get to the point where I can mm-hmm. you know, just build enough of the net worth to where it just works, and if all my businesses go poof, one day, I'll be okay. So yeah. That's what I'm working towards.
Awesome.
So ultimately, you know, reinvesting the money into other assets like stock exchange or real estate and yeah, other assets. to where I don't have to rely on e-commerce or any other businesses.
Yeah.
I can just like do podcasts like you.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing I'm curious about as well is, have you had times throughout this journey where you felt like you were a total failure and, or things you didn't think this was going to work out? Or was it all,
yeah.
It sounds like a pretty smooth journey. If I'm listening, no. I'm thinking, oh, Anastasia's got it all together.
Yeah. Right. No, it was really rough. And especially in the, not just in the beginning, every so often, entrepreneurial journey is like a roller coaster. I remember in the beginning, there was an issue. There was so many issues. There was a huge shipping issue. That was the first one. And I thought, that's it, I'm done. It's so stressful, I couldn't sleep at night. Once it got resolved, I was like, okay, I got over it. I fixed my policies, I'll survive. Mm-hmm. Or I had that one supplier. I think I even posted on the forums about it. I had that one supplier who just didn't want to fix the problem, and I didn't have any money. I started with zero money, and I only had like one credit card, the $3,000 limit, which we sell expensive products. It's not much of a limit to really cover anything. And yeah, no savings, no personal savings. We were like $70,000 in debt, actually, consumer debt. And yeah, and then we had this order. It was just, a common thing, like ship the wrong color or something. And technically it was not my fault. It was supplier's fault and they were supposed to fix it, but they didn't. And it kind of dragged on and the customer was calling and complaining. And it was like first time dealing with something like that. I was freaking out. We ended up resolving it. But I remember it was so tough. I was like, I don't want to do this. This is not for me. This is not the business I want to deal with. It's like e-commerce is not the thing I want to do. And what was frustrating, because like we do drop shipping. We are not in control of our inventory or shipments or anything else. And this was the whole thing, like completely outside of my control. But the customer is complaining about me and he's threatening with bad reviews because he's dealing with me, He thinks it's my fault.
Yeah.
Which I understand. So, but then I resolved the situation and everything was fine. What I learned from it is that if I had money at the time, I would have just ordered the next thing and, made the customer happy and figured it out with supplier later on. But since I didn't, that was really stressful. So I started working on building up like sort of emergency fund. Because at the time I was listening, we were trying to get out of debt. And I was listening to Dave Ramsey podcast programs, like read his books. And that was his suggestion, have an emergency fund for a personal that covers 6 to 12 months, I think, of expenses. Why don't you do it for a business? So I did. And next time I had an emergency, I actually had like a real big damage case when we shipped 3 units to the customer and like all 3 of them got damaged within a period of time. And the last one was like overnighted freight, super expensive. And I was able to handle it just fine without like any meltdowns because I knew at the time I had probably like 5,000 in the bank, like saved up. And it was like 3,000. It cost, the whole thing was like 3,000. And I'm like, okay, well, even if I don't get any damage claims, if everything just goes wrong, I'm still going to be okay. And yeah, so that was a huge lesson definitely learned. And I also fixed my shipping policies because I didn't know anything about freight. It was my first damage case. And customer was like a contractor. And I think he had subcontractors working for him and they were receiving shipments, just signing and like done. And once you sign it, there is a very slim chance, if any, to get any damage claim approved. And they did it for all the 3 damages, and that cost me a lot of money.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, he was also really like one of those really pushy contractors, yelling at me on the phone. So I was like, yeah, it was tough. So that made me question everything too, but I was at least not freaking out about money. I felt okay. I was traveling and visiting my friend in San Diego at the time. It didn't ruin my vacation. I was like, fine. But then I came back, I fixed my policies. I was like, okay, I learned from it, but maybe it's not for me. And every time I would have a customer like that, which happened every few months, you know, like there is this 1% that is never going to be happy. Just yeah. People just, I don't know, just stuff happens to them. And they just, and I really didn't like dealing with that kind of stuff. So like that would always make me want to quit. Like, I don't want to deal with it. And when I hired somebody, like when I hired my first VA to actually deal with all this stuff, I never questioned it again. Like now I don't have questions. Like, do I still want to do this business or not? Because she's my buffer. She's dealing with this. If there is some questions that she can't figure out, if there's like extra mad customers, she would, you know, message me asking me what to do, but I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to talk to them on the phone or and get like, because it gets personal, you know, it's like a business you built and then they are attacking you, saying that you are a horrible business and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that's another benefit of actually hiring a VA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I was ready to quit every few months.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough out there. Yeah.
It can be, yes. I mean, and it's real money too you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. So now that you have this, the problems are outsourced. Does nobody ever say, well, I want to talk to your manager and end up going to you anyway?
I talk to a few of them, but usually when I get on the phone with them, they're nicer. Maybe because they think that I'm a manager, and when they, you know, well, previously they talked to me like I'm a customer service person. I don't know. It does make a difference, and they're also happy that their request was, you know, met. They wanted to talk to a manager. They talked to a manager.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
The power of building a team.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Most of us resist that. And when you see people who are doing well, they've gotten over that. And
because it's outside of your comfort zone. So it's way cozier to just do everything by yourself in the comfort of your home, and you just kind of take care of everything. And it's kind of, oh, it seems like such a big deal to hire somebody. First, you have to pay that person, and then you kind of need to figure out how to find them, and what if they're not right fit, and what if you waste all this time training them, and then they leave, and you have to find a new one, or what if you hire them, and they do something, and they do something wrong, and then you have to go and fix their mistakes. But it's like the worst case scenario. It's, you know, it's probably not going to be that bad.
Yeah.
It's all the limiting beliefs that are holding us back, and it is tough to overcome them.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, Anastasia, this has been so much fun. We're coming up to, we've been talking a while and it's just flown by. So I want to say, first of all, thanks so much for coming on. And for those listening, if they're interested in finding out more about you, what you're doing, perhaps get in touch. Where would you suggest they go? If anywhere.
Get in touch on Instagram. That's my little passion project, I think, going to be for, you know, in the next year or two. Boss Mom Travels, and I just post pictures from our travels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also if you're interested in training or any or coaching, there is a link to the website, Boss Mom Travels. And I'm planning on finally doing a blog about traveling with a baby next year, 2 years later. My baby is not going to be the baby forever, but yes, it's going to be all on Instagram.
Traveling with toddlers. There you go.
Yeah. We'll just We'll modify it as we go.
Awesome. All right. I'll have those links in the show notes. For those of you listening, if you want to reach out, go ahead and do that. So Anastasia, thank you so much. This has been a ton of fun.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun. Thank you for inviting me. And I love your podcast, by the way.
Aw, thank you. Huge thanks to Anastasia for sharing her story and what she's learned along the way. It's really exciting to see that she's been able to build a business that is not only successful, but it actually fits in with her lifestyle and gives her the freedom that she wants in her life. So, if you've been inspired by what she's done, if you've learned anything, don't keep that to yourself. Make sure you share her story with a friend. Now, I do want to mention one more time, if you are having trouble with your bookkeeping, if you're stuck, you don't know what to do, maybe your books are a mess, maybe you don't have books at all, or maybe you just need a pointer in the right direction, we have a no-cost bookkeeping strategy session with me. It's a 30-minute call. Just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books and sign up for this limited time offer. Again, just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books. And that's our show for this week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to Next Level Ecommerce. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss out on the next story.